So it seemed to me as I stood at her helm, and for long hours silently guided the way of this fire-ship on the sea. Wrapped for that interval in darkness myself, I but the better saw the redness, the madness, the ghastliness of others. The continual sight of the fiend shapes before me, capering half in smoke and half in fire, these at last begat kindred visions in my soul. So soon as I began to yield to that unaccountable drowsiness which ever would come over me at a midnight helm. But that night in particular, a strange and ever since inexplicable thing occurred to me. Starting from a brief standing sleep, I was horribly conscious of something fatally wrong. The jawbone tiller smote my side, which leaned against it. In my ears was the low hum of sails just beginning to shake in the wind. I thought my eyes were open. I was half conscious of putting my fingers to the lids and mechanically stretching them still further apart. But, spite of all this, I could see no compass before me to steer by, though it seemed but a minute since I had been watching the card by the steady binnacle lamp illuminating it. Nothing seemed before me but a jet gloom, now and then made ghastly by flashes of redness. Uppermost was the impression that whatever swift, rushing thing I stood on was not so much bound to any haven ahead as rushing from all havens astern. A stark, bewildered feeling as of death came over me. Convulsively my hands grasped the tiller, but with the crazy conceit that the tiller was somehow, in some enchanted way, inverted. My God, what is the matter with me? Thought I. Lo, in my brief sleep, I had turned myself about and was fronting the ship's stern, with my back to her prow and the compass. In an instant I faced back, just in time to prevent the vessel from flying up into the wind and very probably capsizing her. How glad and how grateful the relief from this unnatural hallucination of the night and the fatal contingency of being brought by the lee. According to usage, they were pumping the ship next morning, and lo, no inconsiderable oil came up with the water. The casks below must have sprung a bad leak. Much concern was shown, and Starbuck went down into the cabin to report this unfavorable affair. Now, from the south and west, the Pequod was drawing nigh to Formosa and the Bashee Isles, between which lies one of the tropical outlets of the China waters into the Pacific. And so Starbuck found Ahab with a general chart of the Oriental archipelago spread before him, and another separate one representing the long eastern coasts of the Japanese islands, Nippon, Matsumae, and Sikoke. With his snow-white new ivory leg braced against the screwed leg of his table, and with a long pruning-hook of a jackknife in his hand, the wondrous old man, with his back to the gangway door, was wrinkling his brow and tracing his old courses again. "Who's there?" hearing the footstep at the door, but not turning round to it. "On deck. Begone." "Captain Ahab mistakes. It is I. The oil in the hold is leaking, sir. We must up Burton's and break out." "Up Burton's and break out. Now that we are nearing Japan, heave to here for a week to tinker a parcel of old hoops?" "Either do that, sir, or waste in one day more oil than we may make good in a year. What we come 20,000 miles to get is worth saving, sir."
So it is, if we get it."
"I was speaking of the oil in the hole, sir."
"And I was not speaking or thinking of that at all. Begone, let it leak. I'm all a leak myself. Aye, leaks in leaks. Not only full of leaky casks, but those leaky casks are in a leaky ship. And that's a far worse plight than the Pequod's, man. Yet I don't stop to plug my leak, for who can find it in the deep-loaded hull, or how hope to plug it even if found in this life's howling gale? Starbuck, I'll not have the Burtons hoisted.
What will the owners say, sir?"
"Let the owners stand on Nantucket beach and out-yell the typhoons. What cares Ahab? Owners? Owners? Thou art always prating to me, Starbuck, about those miserly owners, as if the owners were my conscience. But look ye, the only real owner of anything is its commander, and hark ye, my conscience is in this ship's keel. On deck!
Captain Ahab, said the reddening mate, moving further into the cabin, with a daring so strangely respectful and cautious that it almost seemed not only every way seeking to avoid the slightest outward manifestation of itself, but within also seemed more than half distrustful of itself. A better man than I might well pass over in thee what he would quickly enough resent in a younger man, aye, and in a happier, Captain Ahab.
Devils, dost thou then so much as dare to critically think of me? On deck!
Nay, sir, not yet. I do entreat, and I do dare, sir, to be forbearing. Shall we not understand each other better than hitherto, Captain Ahab? Ahab seized a loaded musket from the rack, forming part of most South Seamen's cabin furniture, and pointing it toward Starbuck, exclaimed,
There is one God that is Lord over the earth, and one captain that is Lord over the Pequod. On deck!
For an instant in the flashing eyes of the mate and his fiery cheeks, you would have almost thought that he had really received the blaze of the level tube. But, mastering his emotion, he half calmly rose, and as he quitted the cabin, paused for an instant and said,
Thou hast outraged, not insulted me, sir. But for that I ask thee not to beware of Starbuck. Thou wouldst but laugh. But let Ahab beware of Ahab. Beware of thyself, old man. He waxes brave, but nevertheless obeys. Most careful bravery, that, murmured Ahab as Starbuck disappeared. What's that he said? Ahab, beware of Ahab. There's something there.
Then, unconsciously using the musket for his staff, with an iron brow he paced to and fro in the little cabin. But presently the thick plaits of his forehead relaxed, and returning the gun to the rack, he went to the deck.
"Thou art but too good a fellow, Starbuck," he said lowly to the mate, then raising his voice to the crew. "Furl the t'gallant sails and close-reef the topsails. Fore and aft, back the mainyard, up Burton's, and break out the main-hold."
It were perhaps vain to surmise exactly why it was that, as respecting Starbuck, Ahab thus acted. It may have been a flash of honesty in him, or mere prudential policy, which, under the circumstance, imperiously forbade the slightest symptoms of open disaffection, however transient, in the important chief officer of his ship. However it was, his orders were executed, and the Burtons were hoisted.